Let me tell you that God hasn't changed in any way at all. God is still unwaveringly faithful to fulfill, to keep, to achieve His purpose of grace. This evening we are in Genesis chapter 12, verses 10 through 20. Genesis 12, verses 10 through 20, looking at quite a unique episode in Abram's life where he sojourns down to Egypt and he essentially tells his wife to say that she is his sister and he hands her over to Pharaoh. And the Lord remains faithful to his promise. And the Lord keeps his promise. And the Lord protects Abram and protects Sarai and even afflicts Pharaoh with a great deal of damage, with a plague. In fact, he and his whole household, and he delivers Sarai. He delivers Abram from his own foolish and faithless decision here. But tonight, I want to tell you that the main character of this passage, you would think, just from a cursory reading, you would assume that the main character of this passage is Abram, that we're learning something about Abram, that it's all about Abram. But what I'll show you here is this passage is not chiefly about Abram. It's not about learning about Abram. It's about learning about the God of Abram. We're learning truth about God, and we're seeing how a man is on a journey of faith, how he's learning to follow God. And we'll see this truth about God, that God is unwaveringly faithful to achieve his purpose of grace. God is unwaveringly faithful to achieve his purpose of grace. That has great impact for us. One of the things I want you to understand this evening, when we think about Abram, we think about Abram as a man of faith. That's what he's touted as in the Bible. He is the model of faith. We need to believe like Abram. He's the one who believed in the Lord. It's accounted to him as righteousness. So we need to be like faithful Abram. But not all of Abram's life is characterized by faith. In fact, this very first episode, after Abram is promised by God all these different measures of blessing, right after Abram is promised the faithfulness of God, Abram doesn't trust the Lord. He goes down to a foreign land. He's a foreigner. He's sojourning. He's traveling to Egypt, and he doesn't trust the Lord. You know, when the Lord makes us a promise, when the Lord speaks, and he has spoken, that's what we hold in our hands. The Lord has spoken. We hold his testimony. The reality, in an ideal world, if we were sinless people, what would we do with that testimony? We would believe. We would believe without having to experience consequence first, wouldn't we? Ideally, when the Lord speaks something, we say, Lord, I trust you. I trust your character. If you say that it will be so, I know that it will be so. And I'm just going to trust and I'm going to act based on that faith. Ideally, that's the way that it would happen. But realistically, that's not the way it happens for most any of us. Realistically, the way that faith happens in our lives is that we go through different obstacles, different episodes in our lives, and we see how we fail to trust God. And we see how even in our failures to trust in him, he's still faithful to us. And what does that do for our faith? It grows it. It establishes it. Then we're able to look back and say, Lord, you were faithful in this instance. You were faithful in this episode. Lord, I'll trust you again. It shouldn't be that way. What it should be is, Lord, you have told me your promises. Lord, I trust who you are. Lord, I don't have to go through the bad in order to trust you first. Lord, I'm going to trust you now. But you'll see in Abram's life, Abram is actually going on a journey of faith, much like all of us do. And there's various things he's going to learn here, various things that we can learn. In fact, what it's going to seem like in Genesis chapter 20 is that Abram really doesn't learn these lessons the first time. He doesn't learn these lessons the first time, and he actually gives his wife over to another man again. And it doesn't seem like he even passes these lessons of faith down to his son necessarily, because his son does the very same thing. How many times is it okay to hand your wife over to another man? You would think the easy answer to that would be never. That's never okay. But Abram is overcome by fear. And what you'll see is that Abram is actually more captivated by his fear of Pharaoh than he is by his fear of God. So Abram is tempted in faithlessness to do a number of different things. In verse 10 through 16, what you're going to see is that faithlessness, let me just tell you this, faithlessness toward God will tempt you to all kinds of foolishness. Faithlessness toward God will tempt you to all kinds of foolishness. You could just fill in the blank there of bad decisions, foolish decisions, sinful decisions. And what is the root cause? The root cause is faithlessness. The root cause is not trusting God in His Word, what He has said to be right and wrong. Faithlessness toward God will lead you, will tempt you to all kinds of foolishness. And I'll give you five ways that you can actually see in this passage where Abram is tempted by his faithlessness to distrust God and to exchange things for falsehoods. So let's look at verse 10. It says, "Now there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land." You remember that Abram has sojourned all the way through the land of Israel, through Canaan, through the promised land. The Lord appears to Abram there in Haran, there north of Israel, and he promises to be faithful to Abram, and he promises to give him a land for his own possession, to make him a father of nations, to make him a mighty nation, to bless those who bless him, to curse those who curse him, to give him many, many descendants. And he says, "You just come and you follow me, and I'll show you where to go." And so Abram begins to go where the Lord tells him to go, and he leads him right there through all the way the middle of Israel, the middle of the land of Canaan. And as he gets down to the southernmost tip, that's the Negev, that's what it's called. The Negev is the beginning there of the desert land at the southern end of Canaan. As soon as he gets to the Negev, there's a famine that hits the land. What does it say? It says the famine was very severe. You can actually see that the beginning of chapter 13 actually bookends this episode. Abram leaves the land of Canaan and he goes into Egypt because of famine. And then he's sent out of Egypt because Pharaoh doesn't want him there anymore. And he goes back up into the land of Canaan. Look at what it says in verse 13. "So Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the Negev." Now, when Abram leaves the Negev, when he leaves Canaan, he's not nearly as wealthy as he is when he returns. He's experiencing a severe famine. He's just left his father's household. He's left his people, his kindred, and he leaves them, and he's not nearly as wealthy as he will be when he returns from Egypt. Look at what it says in verse 2 of chapter 13. It says, "Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold." There's something that happens here in Egypt where Abram leaves a poor man from Canaan. He goes into Egypt, and he comes back a very wealthy man. You would think, well, Abram must have done business there. Abram must have done very well for himself. He did business, but he didn't do very well for himself, and he had a kind of a peculiar business here. Let's look at what he does. Verse 10, "Now there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there." It's a temporary journey. That's what sojourn means. "For the famine was severe in the land. When he was about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, 'I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but they will let you live.'" There's been multiple times, and you'll see this in the book of Genesis, there's multiple times that God actually uses a famine to move his people. He moves Abram, he moves Isaac, ultimately he moves Jacob. He moves all three of them out of the promised land, and finally he's going to move Jacob, the father of the Israelites, the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. He's going to move Israel into Egypt, where they're going to be slaves for 400 years. And how did he get them to Egypt? He got them there through famine. This is just a point to be made by way of getting to the meat of the passage. Just understand this, that God does use economic factors to move people. God does use economic factors to move people. A lot of times we want to get so spiritual, and we want to wait for the Lord to give us a dream, and we want the Lord to speak to us so clearly with an audible voice. A lot of times the Lord doesn't speak with an audible voice. In fact, very rarely is it even recorded in Scripture that He speaks with an audible voice. Very rarely in Scripture do you see anybody actually receive a dream from the Lord. But you see it time and again where the Lord uses natural means. He'll use economic factors to move people. So just as you're discerning the Lord's will for your life and the things that you ought to be doing, take that into consideration, that that's not uncommon for the Lord to use economic factors, financial factors, in order to move people, in order to transition people to new things. So He uses this famine and He sends him into Egypt. Now you see the plot here. Abram says, honey, Sarai, her name's not Sarah yet, and his name is not Abraham yet. He says, honey, you are a beautiful woman, and I know that when we go into Egypt, they're going to see your beauty. They don't fear the Lord. That's what he says in Genesis 12. He says, they don't fear the Lord, and so they'll kill me. They have enough respect for marriage, no, not to marry another man's woman. So they'll kill me, but they'll take you for a wife. So just do me a favor here. When we show up and they see how beautiful you are, you just tell them, hey, I'm with my brother. I'm with Abram. He's my brother, and we've traveled here because of this famine. And then Abram's protected. They'll want to do well by Abram because he's just a relative. And so Abram, what you see here already is that he's plotting, isn't he? He's scheming. He's planning. And what is it that's motivating his scheme? What is it that's motivating his scheme? Fear. It's fear. Fear of whom? Fear of the Egyptians. Fear of Pharaoh. I know that when they see you, they will see how beautiful you are and they will kill me. Which implicitly, what does he say? I'm not going to have the power to stop them. Nobody's going to defend me. I've got to come up with some clever way in order to defend myself. You see what he's going to do to defend himself? He's actually going to sacrifice his wife on the altar of his own security. In order to protect himself, he's going to put his wife second rather than saying, sweetheart, I'll not let nobody touch you. I'll die for you. That's not what he says. He says, you just play along with this plan. And ironically enough, Sarai does. She's that submissive. She follows along. She says, yes, Abram, you've led me to this. I will. I'll follow you and I'll obey what you're saying here. So look at what it says in verse 13. Pick up there. Say you are my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared for your sake. Verse 14, here's the action. When Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. So they're not disagreeing with Abram's estimation of his wife. Just a point in fact here, and I'm not disagreeing with the text at all, but just a point in fact, you know how old Sarai is here? 65. She's 65. Abram recognizes she's a beautiful woman, and it takes nobody to tell the Egyptians. They see her and they say, this is a beautiful woman. She's 65 years old. In those days, in fact, Sarai, if I'm right here, she lived until she was 127 years old. So she's actually just right here at midlife. It'd be the equivalent of our 40th birthday is about what she's at. She's blessed. Abram's blessed. They're all very blessed, okay? When Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. Verse 15, and when the princes, the officials that is, when the princes of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And for her sake, he dealt well with Abram. And he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys, and camels. Well, Abram, it seems like financially he's very much so prospering from here. Now, there's no language in the text to say that Pharaoh has approached Abram and said, I'm going to pay a dowry for this woman. This is not an exchange for a wife. But what it is Pharaoh says, this is your sister. I want to marry your sister. I want her as part of my household. So I'm going to show favor to you. And I'm going to give you a lot of things. So Abram seems to be making out very well financially. But what does it cost him? He's making out very well financially, but it's actually costing him his wife. And not even more so, But equally so, it's not only costing him his wife, it's also putting the promise of God in jeopardy. It's putting the promise of God in jeopardy. Let me ask you this. If Abram had not been rescued by God, he'll be rescued by God in verse 17 through 20. If Abram had not been rescued from his foolishness and Sarai had not been rescued from her husband's foolishness by the Lord, what would Abram have done with his life? If Sarai had just remained in Pharaoh's household, he would have effectively lost his wife. He would have effectively lost the ability to fulfill the promise, because the Lord made the promise to Abram and in effect made the promise through Sarah just as well, because those two were one flesh and that promise went for both of them. What if the Lord had not delivered Abram from his foolishness? Now, a point to be made here is that decisions that we make today could potentially devastate our future. Decisions that we make today, decisions that we make every day, could potentially devastate our future. Why are our futures not devastated? Is it because we don't make foolish decisions? It's God's intervention. That's the reason that our foolish decisions have not devastated our futures. But regardless, decisions that we make could potentially devastate our futures. What if the Lord finally said, you know what, this time I'm not going to intervene. This time I'm going to allow you to reap the consequences of the seeds that you've sown. The Lord could do that. The Lord does do that time and again when he sees sufficient. Sinful decisions will always call on you to sacrifice something. They'll always call on you to sacrifice something. Now, let me give you five temptations to sin that Abram felt here, or he experienced and gave into because of his faithlessness. Because ultimately, wasn't that Abram's problem here? Abram's problem was not just a foolish decision. It was foolish. It was unwise. It was not prudent. He was not looking to the future. It doesn't seem like he had calculated the fact that he could potentially lose his wife. He's not calculating that. He's not calculating that he could, in fact, lose his wife and lose his life and everything that he owns. And he's just snuffed out. No nation, no promise coming through him. Ultimately, what is his sin? Ultimately, his sin is not an unwise decision, a lack of prudence. Ultimately, his sin is not foolishness. Ultimately, his sin is faithlessness. It is faithlessness. Let me read to you again Genesis 12, verse 3. What is it that the Lord, Yahweh, has promised Abram? It says in verse 3, I will bless those who bless you. And him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. What is that a promise of? That is a promise of sovereign protection. I will bless anybody who blesses you. But anybody who raises a finger to harm you, I'm going to curse them. I will not allow them to do it. Because what has God determined to do? God has determined in his grace to use Abram as a vessel of blessing. And God is not going to have that promise, that plan, or that purpose thwarted by anybody. Who is the biggest threat to this promise? It's not Pharaoh. Pharaoh's not the biggest threat to this promise. It's actually Abram. Abram's the biggest threat, and you'll see it continually in his life. There's going to be things that he sets in front, and he says, you know what, Lord, I really don't trust you to fulfill your promise. I know you said that you would protect me, but I don't really trust that, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to scheme, and I'm going to plot, because I really don't trust that you will take care of me. It's not what Moses did. It's not what Moses did at all. Moses didn't sacrifice his faith in God, his trust in the Lord, for temporary pleasures. Think about Moses' life. Moses is brought up in the household of Pharaoh. He starts off with all the riches, doesn't he? He starts off with all the riches in his life. He grows up in Pharaoh's household. He grows up as a powerful man. And instead of dwelling in that power, in sin, instead of doing that, he trusts the Lord. And he follows the Lord by faith. Listen to what it says about Moses and his faithfulness in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24 through 26. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasure of sin. This is why. He considered the reproach of Christ, suffering with Jesus. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. You see the different perspective that Moses had than Abraham had? Moses is looking toward the reward. Abram is looking in fear at man. Moses is looking at God, but Abram is fearful of Pharaoh. Look at this. What does it say in 1 John chapter 2, verse 17? This is familiar to us. This is just to dissuade us from looking at the things of the world and not trusting God's promise. Look at what John says. He says, and the world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever. That's the faith that we're called to. We're called to look not at the things of the world. We see those things, but we're not looking lustfully at those things. We're not going after that, because what are we trusting? We're trusting the promise of God. Why do we trust the promise of God? Because we trust the person of God. We trust that God will be faithful, unwaveringly faithful, to achieve his purpose of grace. Hebrews chapter 11 defines what that faith looks like. The writer says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it the people of old received their commendation. That's what Abraham was called to do. Abram, pardon me. He was called to trust the promise of God. I'll bless those who bless you. I'll curse those who curse you. Abram, you don't worry about any man on this earth, because you have the Lord. You have the Lord behind you. That's why we sang that song. I know who goes before me. I know who stands behind. The God of angel armies is always by my side. That's the attitude that Abram should have had. But again, he's walking a journey of faith here. He's learning lessons that we can receive right now, and we don't have to experience the shortfall of it. We can obey them right now. Five things, five ways that Abram's faithlessness tempted him to sin, and five ways that your faithlessness will tempt you to sin. You can write these down. They'll be on the board for you. Number one, faithlessness will tempt you to forfeit the future in light of the present. Faithlessness will tempt you to forfeit the future in light of the present. It'll tempt you to say, you know what, Lord, I know you've promised me all these things in heaven. I know you've promised me these things in your kingdom, but I would rather do this. That's what our sinful decisions say. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, boastful pride in possessions. Lord, I know you've promised me all these things, but I don't really trust that you'll give that. Faithlessness will tempt you to forfeit the future in light of the present. I've gone fishing with Steve Thrower a few different times, and his experience as a detective for the DA's office, I was picking his brain about crime and about how criminals think. And I said, Steve, I really just can't wrap my mind around it. I can't wrap my mind around it, how a criminal will do something so brazen as to go so far as to murder a human being. And I said, don't they think about the fact that when that happens, their whole life is forfeit. Their whole future is forfeit. They're never going to see their family outside of those prison bars. They're never going to experience life and freedom the way most everybody else on earth does. Do they not think about that? He says, that's just it. That's just it. He said, Jordan, of all the criminals I ever interviewed, none of them thinks past the moment. None of them thinks past the moment. They do what they want to do in the moment without a thought to the future. Faithlessness isn't just lived out in criminals that end up behind our bars. Faithlessness will tempt every single person to forfeit their future in light of the present. Number two, Faithlessness will tempt you to compromise your integrity for security. Faithlessness will tempt you to compromise your integrity for security. Isn't that what Abram's done here? Abram has compromised his integrity. He's not telling the truth. So, well, in Genesis 20, he tells Abimelech that Sarai is actually his sister. They have the same father. They have a different mother. So she's his half-sister. Well, what's a half-truth? Would Mom always say? Half-truth is a whole lie. Right? You're intentionally trying to deceive somebody, Abram. And because he's trying to deceive, because he's compromising his integrity, he thinks he's going to purchase security. He's not purchasing security, though, is he? He's forfeiting his integrity, and he is sacrificing his wife, the very one that he has been charged to protect. He's sacrificing her because he's thinking about himself first and foremost. Men, that you know that. That's not the way that it ought to be. We ought to be doing anything we can to protect our wives. We ought to be doing it maintaining our integrity. Nobody is protected by lies. Nobody is protected by lies. Nobody is protected by compromising integrity. What does the Lord say? He says, the things that are done in secret, they'll be shouted out on the rooftops. Nothing's going to be hidden that will not be made manifest for all to see there in the day of judgment. Faithlessness will tempt you to compromise your integrity for security. Number three, faithlessness will tempt you to abandon wisdom for convenience. Faithlessness will tempt you to abandon wisdom for convenience. Abram said, you know what? This is going to work out for me right here. That this is going to keep me safe. This is going to make us get through this time here. But what does he forget? They might make it through that famine, but they're not going to make it out of family. They might be able to eat for a few days, for a few years, but their family is destroyed. But that's what faithlessness will do. Faithlessness will tempt you to abandon wisdom for the sake of convenience. Number four, faithlessness will tempt you to scheme instead of trust. Faithlessness will tempt you to scheme rather than trust. You say, well, I'm not really satisfied with my income, so I'm going to scheme and I'm going to plot. Is it good to be wise? Is it good to figure out a way maybe to make more money? Well, sure, but you can't compromise your integrity. You can't compromise your faith in God. There's a lot of ways in this world to make money. There's a lot of dishonest ways to do that just as well. But faithlessness will tempt you to scheme instead of trust. Number five, faithlessness will tempt you to dismiss the character of God and rely on yourself. Faithlessness will tempt you to dismiss the character of God and rely on yourself. Ultimately, isn't that what Abram did? Lord, I know you promised me just a few verses back. I know you promised me here just recently that you would bless me, you'd protect me, you'd give me a land, you'd give me an inheritance, you'd give me nations, you'd make me multiply and have many descendants, but I really don't see any of that take place. My wife's getting older. I'm getting older. We're still sojourning. We can't live in the land. They're inhabited, right? So instead of trusting in your promise, I'm going to scheme here. And I'm going to plot, and I'm going to get my way out of this predicament. Lord, you can just pick up the pieces when I'm done, but I think I know a better way through this. That's what Abram did. Abram is not a model of faithfulness here in this passage. He's a model of faithlessness. Now, what does the Lord do? Verse 17 through 20, the Lord actually delivers Abram from his foolishness. Verse 17 through 20, this is what you see, that God is unwaveringly faithful to achieve his purpose of grace. It says in verse 17, But the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, three questions here, cumulative effect. He's furious. What is this that you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her. Go. Literally, that last sentence says, now then, behold, get your wife and leave. Look at what Pharaoh does here in 20. And Pharaoh gave men orders concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. I think that verse 20 actually has the connotation. The word there for men is not the same as the word for princes up there. He's not calling his officials. You know who he's calling on now? Soldiers. He's calling on armed guards. And he's saying, Abram, you take your wife. These men are going to see you out. You know what Pharaoh is making sure happens? He's making sure, number one, he never sees Abram again. And he's making sure, number two, that Abram makes it safely out of his household and out of Egypt. Why? Why is Pharaoh so bent on getting Abram out of there and getting him out of there safely? What has Pharaoh realized? This man is under the protection of God. I've touched this man. I've touched his wife. I've almost married his wife. This man is under the protection of God. I cannot go near this man. You know what Pharaoh has begun to do? Pharaoh is trusting the promise of God made to Abraham more than Abraham was. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. And Abram says, I know that's right. Get out of my house. Get out of Egypt. Leave. You're under armed guard. Leave and get out of here. You know what's ironic about this passage? Abram is not touted as a faithful character here. There's a number of things, in fact, that are ironic. Abram doesn't say a word in response to Pharaoh. Pharaoh rebukes Abram, and Abram just receives it because Abram has no response. Abram is completely in the wrong. You know who's in the right? Pharaoh. Pharaoh is more righteous than Abram is in this instance. Pharaoh believes the promise of God more than Abram does in this instance. And moreover, you know what's true? Pharaoh, at the end of this passage, fears God more than Abram does. Unrighteous Pharaoh fears God more than Abram does. Well, what does God do? Does the Lord say, you know what, Abram? You have failed me miserably. You obviously can't measure up to my standard here. You obviously can't be my man. You're going to do the most cowardly thing you could, and you're going to harm your wife. When you should be protecting her, you're going to distrust my promise. You're going to hand your wife, who is going to bear Isaac, you're going to hand her over to another man so that you can be safe. Don't you know I said I'd protect you? Abram, you don't trust me. Therefore, I'm leaving you in the dust. Is that what the Lord does? No, the Lord actually steps in and afflicts Pharaoh with a plague. A lot of times we would think that the first plagues that came to Egypt was in the Exodus when God was delivering the people of Israel. But God delivered his people out of Israel more than one time. He delivered his people out of Israel many times. Here's the first instance of a plague that he brings on Egypt and delivers them out. Why? Is it because Abram is a faithful man who trusts the Lord? That is not it at all. You know, the Lord didn't even choose Abram when Abram believed. Abram was called out of Ur of the Chaldees when he was worshiping false gods. And God, in his sovereign grace, chose him, blessed him, called him out, and promised him all these number of assurances that he would give him and his descendants. All based on what? Not based on Abram. Totally based on grace. Now, what would make us think that God has dealt with us any differently? Has God chosen to bless any one of us because of our faithfulness? Not on our life. Has God chosen to remain with us because we've just been trying so hard? Is it good that we try so hard? Absolutely. Try harder, okay? We all ought to do that. But why is God faithful to us? Because God is unwaveringly determined to keep His promise. He will keep His promise despite what His chosen people do. God will keep His promise. He's unwaveringly determined, unwaveringly faithful to achieve His purpose and grace. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 13, the Apostle Paul, he says, "If we are faithless, He remains faithful." Why? "For He cannot deny Himself." So God makes a promise. He'll never leave, nor will He forsake. Not because we're keeping up our end of the bargain, but because He made a promise. Boy, aren't you glad that the Lord treats us that way? I sure am glad that the Lord treats me that way. He treats me no differently than He did Abram. Chosen by grace, secured by grace, secured by His sovereign grace, kept in His grace, not because of my own doings. No man ever merited the mercies of God. Here's Abram receiving it, and he still doesn't get it. He still doesn't get it. You'll see that play out in the rest of the narratives. What should we do with this? What's our call to this? You know, there's actually a psalm. There is a psalm of application for this passage. There is a psalm of application for this passage. I'm going to read a lengthy section here for you. It'll be on the board. Psalm 105, and I'll read verses 4 down through 15. The psalmist says, "Seek the Lord and His strength." Now this, I'm telling you, this is written about Abram. This is not written about the people of Israel first. It's written about Abram. "Seek the Lord and His strength." That's not what Abram did. "Seek the Lord and His strength. Seek His presence continually. Remember the wondrous works that He has done, His miracles and the judgments He uttered, O offspring of Abraham, His servant, children of Jacob, His chosen ones. He is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. He remembers His covenant forever, the word that He commanded for 1,000 generations, the covenant that He made with Abraham. He sworn promise to Isaac, which He confirmed to Jacob as a statute, to Israel as an everlasting covenant, saying, 'To you I will give the land of Canaan as your portion for an inheritance.'" Here it is. "When they were few in number, of little account, and sojourners in it, wandering from nation to nation, from one kingdom to another people, He allowed no one to oppress them. He rebuked kings on their account, saying, 'Touch not my anointed ones, do my prophets no harm.'" You know, we're not learning lessons chiefly about Abram in this passage. We're learning lessons about God. We're learning lessons about how we ought to trust God, how Abram was failing to trust the Lord in this instance. As he gets older, things begin to change for him. But God is unwaveringly faithful to achieve His purpose of grace. Now, people say these kinds of things, and they're wrong when they say it. They say, well, the God in the Old Testament, very different than the God in the New Testament. Let me tell you that God hasn't changed in any way at all. God is still unwaveringly faithful to fulfill, to keep, to achieve His purpose of grace. I want you to see the difference here in the mentality of Jesus and that of Abram in Genesis 12. You remember in Luke chapter 13, there are Pharisees that come to Jesus and they say, Herod is seeking to kill you. Herod is seeking to kill you. Now, if Jesus acted like Abram, what would Jesus have said? Well, let's figure out a plan here. Is there somebody we can give to Herod? Some way we can appease him? Is there something we can sacrifice on the altar of convenience to kind of make Herod give this up a little bit and make it where he's not going to seek my life? Could we make that happen? That's not what Jesus says. Jesus is a faithful man. He's full of the Spirit. He's trusting in the Father. Listen to what Jesus says. One of my favorite verses in all the Bible. That's why you hear me quote it so often. Luke 13, verse 32. "And Jesus said to them, 'Go and tell that fox, Behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I finish my course. Jesus had unwavering faith in God's promise to fulfill his purpose of grace. That's why he said, Herod, you can't do anything. You're a harmless, worthless, unclean rodent. You can't do anything to God's purpose. I'm going to do what God sent me here to do. You bless me, you'll be blessed. You curse me, you'll be cursed. But you will not touch me apart from God's will. So I'm going to go do this today. I'm going to go do that tomorrow. And he says, and on the third day, I finish my course. What did Jesus do on the third day? He rose up from the dead. Jesus is saying, I will accomplish exactly what God sent me here to accomplish. And Herod, you can't do a single thing about it. Now, who are we supposed to imitate? Jesus. Abram could have had that same confidence had he trusted the promise of God in verses 1 through 3 of Genesis 12. He could have had the same confidence. He could have said, you know what, sweetheart? We're going into Egypt, and I know you're beautiful, and I know everybody's going to want to take you away, and they're going to want to kill me, but nobody's touching us. You know why? Because God promised to take care of us. And we can walk right into the middle of the lion's den, Daniel, and we know that God's going to keep us. We can walk right into the fire, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and we know God's going to take care of us. We can walk right to the cross, and we know God's going to raise us. We can do that. Now, that's the response of faith. Now, what's the promise that God has made to you? John chapter 6, verse 40. For this is the will of my Father, that everyone who looks on the Son and believes in him should have eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. That's God's promise to us. See, it's one thing for us to say, man, Abram was faithless in that situation. And Jesus was full of faith in his situation. That's not enough. Because what we need to say is, I will imitate the faith of Jesus. I will trust in the promise of God. I'm not going to forfeit the future in light of the present. I'm not going to compromise my integrity for security. I won't abandon wisdom for convenience. I'm not going to scheme. I'm going to trust. And I'm not going to dismiss the character of God and begin to rely on myself. I'm just going to trust in the Lord because God is unwaveringly faithful to achieve his purpose of grace. God's ultimate purpose of grace is eventually found out, realized, and completed in Jesus. God's purpose of grace that he promised to Abram was what? To bless all peoples through him. To fulfill the promise that he made there in Genesis chapter 3, to deliver from Satan and from sin. And God accomplishes that purpose of grace in and through Jesus. And now we enter into that same covenant, that same promise, by faith in Jesus. Just as a word of closing here, when you think about the way that Abram treated his wife, there are many lessons we can learn from that. Men, it ought not be so. We should never abuse our wives. We should never put them in a position like that. We should never compromise them. We should be willing to die for them. Let me ask you this. Aren't you glad that Jesus did not treat us the way Abram treated Sarai? Because Jesus could have forfeited us and set us aside and said, you know what? I'm not going to suffer. I'm not going to go to a cross to deliver them. I'm going to be secure. But that's not what Jesus does at all. Jesus abandons his security. Jesus abandons his home. Jesus leaves heaven. He leaves his riches. And he walks among us as one of us, enduring all the struggles that we do, not so he could forfeit us, but so that he could purchase us out of our sin, out of our faithlessness, and achieve his sovereign purposes of grace. To take these people who were not his and to make them his own. I'm glad that God is unwaveringly faithful to achieve his purpose of grace. Would you pray with me?